fines, and which of course they have toothless and haven't done anything, a dozen times in the last like 2 months alone for totally lying through their teeth.
I think David is out taking some Celebrex. Where did he go?
I'd like to go back for just a quick second to explain how the Arbitrons came about. Back in the 1950s, when radio was becoming very popular again with music in various formats after the after all of the soaps and all of the dramas had gone to television, the local radio salesmen were engaging in lots of wars with each other, in lots of ad wars with each other regarding the rates that clients would have to pay to get on radio stations. And it was a form of economic anarchy where the stations were not making as much money as they felt they could because each salesman was kind of undercutting the other in order to get the ad business. The only way to stop that was to come up with a unified methodology that the advertisers could agree on, that this is how many cost of thousand that we're paying in order to get on the air. Arbitron was only originally created as a means to regulate ad rates, and
right.
since it's developed into this monster that in effect has totally destroyed radio.
Could is it legal for WBAI to advertise itself
sure.
on the radio?
Oh yeah,
we should go into the other road.
We have a commercial license. This
invade
is a commercial.
Other
definitely
radio
there's
empires.
Nothing except our bylaws, which are totally meaningless. The Pacifica bylaws, everybody knows, are a joke. There's nothing really that stops us from selling ads even as we are with the employees and the structure we have now tomorrow. Oh. And in fact, don't we sell ads? I mean, we advertise stuff from day, you know, from morning till night on this radio station, but it's all like progressive cool stuff, you know, so
yeah.
it's all right. But, I mean, you know, one buddy, a socialist guy I used to know, told me many times, boycott capitalism and starve to death. In a capitalist world, you got to be capitalist. It's really our approach to the capitalist world that's what's interesting. And like most people shiver in the corner in fear, you know, being blacklisted or white outed or blacklisted or however you want to put it. And somehow we're the crazy BAI people. I mean, I think there's people from California listening to the show. I know that. So I think William Mandel out in California.
Peter Frank.
Who, you know, and I saw this on the internet, on his website. William Mandel has a picture of him before the House Un-American Activities Committee, where he was dragged in 1959 before this committee and was asked, are you or have you ever been a communist? And of course, I guess he was, but I don't know if he ever admitted it. But he just didn't even, before the United States Senator barely got the word out of his mouth, and William Mandel launched into the most
beautiful.
It really was.
Yeah.
He just ripped them to shreds and stormed out. And, of course, he never worked in commercial anything again for the
right.
rest of his life.
But
yeah.
he did have a voice on Pacifica.
He had a voice on Pacifica until he was removed from the air in the 1995 coup at KPFA.
Right.
And then he got a little more attention.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he's, what, about 80, 85 or something?
And Samori, we used to call him after that happened and when it happened and before it happened and put him on behind the news.
And to talk about it. But he was quite a hero. Mm-hmm. And it was sad how they treated him, you know, out there. And I think a lot of people, you know, what's funny is that because people make the, and I want to put this to you because I don't think it's happening that way here, but people say, well, at KPFA, at first, a lot of people turned their back on people like William Mandel and allowed a first round of purges to happen, saying, well, changes had to be made, there was bad management, you know, some of these shows were anachronistic, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore, and he was doing a Russian affairs program.
When they came for William Mandel, I did nothing. By the time they came for the electronic music people, there was no one to help me.
And then, you know, 3 years later, we had what happened, you know, 4 years later at KPFA last year, which our listeners know about in the overnights where we talked about it extensively. So people, I know there's a lot of fear out there that that's what's happening here. You know, that this is just the first round of purges, the early stage of it, and it's going to come down in a year or two harder. And I know there's that fear. And it's happened already in KPFA, so I can understand how people would have that fear. The only protection we have is in whether or not we believe that there's a truly, you know, ethical person in the heart of our station manager, you know, a person who will fight for our interests ultimately, even though they're a manager and work for Pacifica ultimately. And I love Utrice, you know. I love her show, and I've heard her talk a lot, and I don't agree with all her politics. I have my own views on a lot of things. But she put together a hell of a show.
She sure does.
And people loved her, and she built a real, you know, audience around herself. And, you know, I think that's something that none of these other managers could really say who were involved in KPFA. None of them really were from, even Nicole Sawyer.
We were radio people.
Were from the people, the people. Mm-hmm. You know, they had nobody knew even who Nicole Sawyer was among the people. You know, she was just a bureaucrat in radio. Mm-hmm. She might have been a nice, much better person.
Why is she always described as the much-loved Nicole Sawyer? Why was she so loved?
What was funny is that she was responsible for the 95 coup, so she was somewhat hated. But I think what happened, it's similar to what I heard happen here in that, you know, Valerie for, you know, 9 or 10 years was not a good friend to the programmers, except to the fact that she stayed out of programming.
She did do that.
And she stayed out, which was made her, I guess, by default a friend.
Very important.
But she wasn't a fighter for the programmers, no. But in the last year, some say when she saw the handwriting.
Valerie.
I don't know. I was saying in the last year, she started to wake up a little bit and to wise up and to come out.
This is really a labor dispute in disguise, and in such disguise as I got a Santa Claus beard and hat and a big belt. You can't tell what it is, but I think it is that
Walt Whitman beard.
Oh, but tell me, you are.
but you know, I worked under Valerie for 10 years, and I had my ups and downs with her. But you know, in the end, I mean, she was the person in charge of the station for 10 years, and she was around for a long time before that. Defend her, please do. I want to hear the
okay. It's very it's very simple. It's just like she's no different in my view than in a certain way any of the other managers at the end of their toward the end of their tenure when Pacifica tries to pull the manager one way and the staff who the manager knows and has worked with and has friends among need her to go in a different direction. And one manager, Ed Goodman, I may as well say his name, locked himself in his office and put the words, remember what it said on the outside of his office?
What?
Broom closet.
Now that's a good manager.
Well, he went to jail so that he wouldn't have to give up the weatherman papers to the FBI, who said, we need them for evidence. He said, no, you don't. They're reporters' personal notes. We cannot surrender masters. We are not to be instruments of the state. We do not aid district attorneys. We are journalists. We would lose our credibility if, you know, he went through the whole rap. I don't know whether it came from his heart or whether the people in the news department instructed him about journalistic ethics, but he was a good learner insofar as that went. But there was a time later on when the staff needed more money and maybe needed different kind of programs, and he had it run out of the station. I remember one former broadcaster who was now working at other stations who used to, when the manager, when she saw the manager, she would chase him down the hall screaming invective at him. And finally he said, I don't have to take this. No, I don't have to take this. I can work in a mental hospital. Right, and be paid better, you know.
Well,
when somebody starts screaming at me, I have the right to give them drugs.
One manager here at BAI, a recent manager, told me that he literally gets phone calls day in and day out. Maybe Joni, you told me this story, so I heard it secondhand.
I did.
Maybe I forget, but I heard this story. He gets calls nonstop, day in and day out, from people who want to work here at WBAI, who just got fired from wherever they were working in radio, and they come to WBAI because they all hear the same thing. There's no rules here. Anything goes. What does that mean?
Well, you know, that's another version. That's the person who believes in control's version of it. The journalist's version of it is, I have fought for and I will try to keep my freedom, because that's my journalistic integrity, and that's what I learned from Jack London and from Mark Twain and from Voltaire and, you know, all and Peter Zenger, you know, and Peter Zenger.
Yeah,
and
too.
You know, all through.
Even better.
Right. So we should be the place where everybody's been fired from every other
place.
Yeah,
but you don't see a million journalists coming running around
That's
here.
That's why Roscoe came here.
Right.
Malachi McCord.
That's right. Maybe you can probably name a bunch of other names, too.
Mm-hmm. And I remember, Bob, everybody, whenever they would get fired from the old WPLJ, including Vinnie Scalzo and all the people who ended
Bennett.
Up at WNEW, Alex Bennett, who I used to work for.
Really?
They would all come on WBAI, especially on Bob's show or on Steve Post's show on the weekends, all to tell their stories. When I had to leave the international station that I was working at 2 years ago, this show, Let 'Em Talk, is where I came to explain why I left.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been the place where people can go and feel that there isn't some manager
right.
hovering over them. And that sort of leads to a mentality where it could get toxic a little bit, though, sometimes. I mean, that's what I'm getting at.
Well,
I mean,
but David,
I think
to me, it's
two different things.
Right. Because I'm talking about people being chased down the hall, being screamed
right.
invectives
at. We're talking
at.
About, on the one hand, on-air freedom of speech, and on
Not
the other
Svengali
hand...
Not Svengali Solzhenitsyn.
And on right. the other hand, in day-to-day dealings outside, off the air, in terms of running the station. Is that right?
Right. right. And yeah. that's where the toxicity is.
Well, when Chris Albertson was fired, he called my station. When Frank Milspaugh, who had been... manager was fired, he called my program and put him on the air. Let him talk.
He was fired from here.
From BAI.
Yeah, well...
So he could talk about it on the air.
Well, actually, yeah.
But what I'm getting
Maybe
at is...
Maybe he wasn't fired. You know, he claimed that...
I don't think anyone can deny that I would walk in here. I mean, you know, I've been working somewhere else doing my late night show, but, you know, everybody told me, and I'd walk in during the day, there was, in the last few months... a really bad atmosphere around here. Am I crazy? Did I not see something? Or
around
am I,
here?
Yeah.
What way specifically? Could
there was,
you present some evidence?
Guards and changes
right.
locks. And
no, there wasn't.
No locks.
People
right.
going
We're
through
no
jail.
Locks.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that could this have been
threatening
avoided?
Other people and,
could this have been avoided if I didn't hear story after story after story of folks... who were working here, of how horrible the working conditions were. I mean, I heard all those stories before the locks were changed and all these things. I mean, it sounded, to be honest with you, the locks changing doesn't seem like a, it seems like a continuation of
at
how
least,
bad things
yeah.
were getting anyway.
Now they're, at least
for
they're,
a long time before it happened.
Now there are locks, but you don't know.
Right. Many people had told me that they don't think that anything that happened here wasn't like predictable or coming for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as I see a lock, I reach for my... As soon as I see locks, I reach for my cream cheese. So,
well, you know, you think eventually, you know, I mean, how long does do keys stay in the hands of one person? I mean, eventually, other people get them and copies get made, and it gets to be the situation that it was.
Where is Emmanuel Goldstein when we need him to hack the combination?
I mean, I don't. It's not like they put in like hyper security locks, and the security guy is here. It doesn't seem like. It's unfortunate that he's here. And but, however, let me be the devil's advocate. Oh, this is the devil's advocate. Several people who work here told me that the security situation in this place was atrocious. That they worked here every day in fear.
Wait, the security people themselves?
People who worked here every day told me they lived in fear that the
because
door.
There were no locks.
Yes, there were no locks on any doors.
Oh, like
there was
anybody might wander in.
Right, no. There was two back doors that were never locked or watched, and people were constantly being caught here inside here.
I gotta say something.
Go ahead.
I gotta say something.
Yeah.
In, you know, David Amram.
Yeah. Sure.
Right.
Musician, great
right.
guy.
Yeah. We were still on 39th Street, mm-hmm. and. David Amram was sitting in the control room and reading his autobiography. I thought, what a great program, this fantastic life. And he was reading, reading, and it was really, he's a great reader, you know, he's a musician, and he reads well, and it was really a terrific story. And Nancy Allen, who worked in the other room down the hall making the air checks, you know, she and, you know, helping put the records together and doing dubbing for the West Coast. She was doing her, and she came down and started trying to open the door of the control room, which I always, as we did in those days, was locked, so that there was a sign outside that said, "Do not rush into master control."
Right.
Right? And then there were instructions.
I saw a lot of insane fights start over that in this
right.
place.
Underneath that, it said, "Try to catch the eye of the person at the controls, wave to them, mm-hmm. and ask for admission."
Right.
If they then, you know,
did they buzz you in?
You could unlock the door from the
console. Well, that's a clever
right?
way to
yeah.
go.
Right?
That seems like.
All right. So anyway, Nancy Allen is trying to open the door. And so I open it up and she's. I was like, "Shh, Nancy, he's waiting." The little room that was, you know, much smaller than this room, right? There's David Amram sitting at one microphone. And I'm on the only other microphone in the room. And David and Nancy Allen is trying to. "Nate, what's the matter, Nancy?" I said. She said, "Somebody came into the other room and he hit me."
Hmm.
I said, "He hit you." So I went up. I said, "Who is this guy?" And I go outside and I see, and there's this guy who says, "I've got to get on the air now," and she wouldn't let me in. I said, no, calm down. So, you know, he calmed down, and after about 10 minutes, I went back, and the Amram was still reading, right? And
great opportunity.
Right? Yeah, I mean, he would have been. I mean, we had planned to have him read all night long, you know, but he's looking at, you know, what's going on out there, you know? And you can hear it in the tape of his reading, you know? So anyway, the guy sits down, he comes in, he tells a story of how he and some other people went to some prep school, and how they were, you know, they did something, and they were, or they called the police on them, and, you know, he told the story. After 1977, this guy became program director at WBAI.
What was his name?
I won't say.
Well, I think the old rule about that the person on the air has the right to determine who is in the studio could certainly have been applied last Saturday when I was listening to Grandpa Al Lewis. And, you know, Al can be, I guess, inflammatory at times if you want to. But I heard Betsy Wash, Bessie Wash, yes, a slip of the tongue, come into the studio on the air and start talking in the background, trying to correct Grandpa Al Lewis. And
that was a little, I think that was an incorrect move on Bessie's Wash.
Yes,
Bessie's Wash.
However, Grandpa get criticized for that, but as far as I know, as a radio person, either in commercial radio or not, if you're in the, at least if you're in the, in trying to create a program, you don't want somebody, especially from that high up in management, you know, the ultimate boss standing over you. It's just not
some bad moves have been made.
It's a bad move, but I think technically, actually, the owner or manager of a radio station has some kind of right to entry. I mean, the thing is, we don't have any procedures, so how would we know? I mean,
right,
you can do anything you want.
But she did attempt to interrupt the program.
She did attempt to interrupt the program, but she had also no procedure for how to do it. She didn't know how to even get on the microphone, apparently, because she wasn't on it. She was talking off mic.
I talked to Grandpa about it.
That's odd.
What did he say?
This is what he told me. He said, if you remember, it was snowing that day, very heavily, right? He said, my wife and I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning because we set out with mucklucks and with sled dogs to get in, you know, so he wouldn't be late. And he got there at 8 o'clock, and he was sitting outside in the lobby, and there was a fairly attractive, he said, young woman sitting there, and she said hello, and he said hello, and he went on reading his mail, and she said nothing else to him, didn't introduce herself or give her name, he went in and sat down and began to do a program. And it
don't you think she wasn't used to? She's not.
She, she